Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
From childhood, we've been urged to strive to live up to our potential. There's a counterargument that's often made, and that's usually for work-life balance. The claim is that it's healthier, and certainly it's more family-friendly. But rarely is an argument made for doing the minimum, the least you can get away with. And yet, a maybe not so foolish argument can be made for that. So, I'm going to make the argument for maximum striving, and then for minimum, doing the least you can get away with. Now, of course, you may come away from listening to both sides of this, opting for the middle, the golden mean, the work-life balance thing, but maybe not. But I'll certainly invite you to call in and opine as to either which side you think is wiser or what you've decided for yourself and why. All right, I'll start with the case for striving. Well, that argument centers around the fact that your life is worthy to the extent that you do make maximum contribution. That ensures that you've benefited your sphere of influence as much as possible. Even if you're just aiming for work-life balance, not just the minimum, you're giving less to the world. And that's true whether you're a, let's just say, intellectually limited but physically robust person whose best contribution would be, say, as a ditch digger, or you're a highly analytical, sophisticated scientist who works long hours to try to find a cure for cancer. And, of course, subsumed in this is the notion that it really is true that making a difference is what really matters. It certainly matters more than the pursuit of happiness. I mean, I could be happy spending all my days hiking, playing with my doggy Einstein, watching Netflix while I'm stoned out to my gourd, or out of my gourd. But my life would certainly be much less well-led than if I strove maximally to live up to my potential. Another argument for the case for striving is more selfish. If you're striving for the maximum, it feels good. It feels virtuous. It feels empowering. You kind of walk the earth feeling like a mensch, a person of character. And at the end of each full day of focused work that's using your best abilities, you can put your head on the pillow with a feeling of contentment. One more plus. Wise people are going to respect and like you. Lazy people may be jealous of you, and they'll probably try to tear you down, but they're not worth bothering with. Also, when you are striving a lot, it gives you hope that maybe you're going to achieve something greater than you ever have before. I guess one more comes to mind also, which is it's distracting. You know, life is a lot of stuff that's scary in your life, in your personal life, in your professional life, whatever. And if you're striving, it's kind of a distraction from those scary things. All right, now I'm going to make the case for doing the minimum, the least you can get away with. If you're average or below, you don't really have any distinctive ability or style, the honest, unvarnished truth is that someone else could probably do your work as well as you can, maybe even better than you can. The unfortunate thing is that most of us are fungible. I guess that's the fancy word for interchangeable. And if you do just the minimum, say 20 hours a week of just, you know, moderately hard working, not killing yourself, you are therefore, in good liberal tradition, you are making room for somebody else to have work to do and some money. It's the whole basis behind the socialist 35-hour maximum work week in France. Another argument for doing the minimum? Striving is, by definition, hard. Do we really need to be that Calvinist, that self-abnegating? Another argument for doing the minimum? If you do the minimum, you're probably going to be less stressed, and so you're going to live longer. And besides, you'll have a more pleasurable life. Doesn't pleasure matter? What are your thoughts? I've made done the best job I could of trying to make the case for maximum striving and make the best case for doing the minimum, the least you can get away with. So I welcome your call if you want to share which side you think is more compelling, or because, you know, it may not be the side compelling, you know, maybe it is the golden mean, it is striving for the work-life balance thing, or you simply want to share what you decided is right for you, at least at this point in your life. We change at different points in our life. So those are all good reasons to call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. 4134. And I want to issue, while I'm waiting for the calls to come in, I'd like to issue a special invitation. This was an impulse. I like giving talks, and I like playing the piano and giving concerts. I like telling stories. So I decided this Saturday night, I'm going to open my home in Oakland to my dear KELW listeners, who I only have room for 22 people. But if you and somebody you care about like to come to hear me do about 45 minutes of like career tips that are a little less than obvious, as well, that's like 45 minutes of that, and I'll also do some Q&A, maybe some workovers, and then I'll take a 5-minute break, and then I will play a 45-minute concert on the piano, interspersed with stories of my misadventures, which there have been more than a few. And I'm going to start to kind of set the stage 6:45 p.m. This Saturday. I will serve champagne and hors d'oeuvres, and so try to make it a lovely evening. So here's the deal: if you would like to come, you email me, and I will let you know if space is available. My email address is mnemco. That's M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, E M as in Mary, K O at Comcast.net. And without further ado, let me go out the phone number one more time. If you want to opine on whether my argument for maximum striving is more compelling, my argument for doing the minimum, the least you can get away with, is more compelling, or you want to share where you consciously are trying to strive for. Is it that work-life balance, moderation? Is it extremity? Some people love to work nearly every waking minute. Some other people just like to work 10 hours a week putting up signs for the next salsa concert in San Francisco and then go home and get stoned. if you want to share your opinion, the phone number here for all those reasons to work with Marty Nemco and KELW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it is you. Are you there? Are you there? How have we lost you? Last shot. Okay, I guess he or she is gone. So, I will then move on to something. Apparently, this is not exactly generated a whole lot of caller. Oh, yes, there. Oh, now the calls are coming in. Okay. So I'm just going to tap dance for a second and say again that if you would like to come to my last minute little mini lecture of non-obvious tips about career, as well as a 45-minute piano concert and little stories of my misadventures, and get some free champagne and hors d'oeuvres, just email me at mnemco@comcast.net. That's M-N-E-M-K-O at Comcast.net. And now I think we're probably ready to go to the phones. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What is on your mind?
Hi there.
Hello.
Hey, so this is an interesting topic, actually. I've thought a lot about it over the years.
Good.
I have, had a whole... I'm 42 years old. Mm-hmm. I had a whole career, from time I was around 1920. I graduated in 1994, so it was kind of the beginning of the dot-com era, and you didn't really need to go to college back then to work in tech, I just kind of plunged right in and had, a nice, successful, by all means, made a lot of money, as everyone would think that's really important, and, worked until I made myself sick from, just working myself to death. And believe me, all tech companies are happy to do that. At least they were back in the day.
They still are. Not all, but many, many. There are a lot of people who love to work 70-80 hours a week. They're working on that coding project, and they'll stay up all night to get it done. I know a lot
of
them. And
I loved it. Actually, I used my talents for technology to help nonprofit industry. I, was one of the first people to help raise $1 million for a nonprofit online. I helped create the word euphilanthropy. We were part of what we thought was a movement to, help change the world. And trust me, nonprofits are very happy to work you to death as well.
Absolutely.
So, what I learned from all that was that, really your work-life balance is not really an option in the world that we live in today. It really is fundamental to making a world that is, fair, just, all the things that everyone that listens to this radio station would think is important. You know, it's essential to be able to, have your own mental health, to give back to your community, to be a good parent, to be a good family member, to be a good friend. You have to have, work-life balance. I took about 10 years off and, healed myself and canned and farmed and spent time not thinking about how to change the world.
And what would you say? What would you say to the person there? Because I do have a number of friends and clients, and I'll be really honest. I work 70 hours a week. I'm 67 and a half years old, and I've been working 70 or 80 hours a week from when I was a teenager, from when I was 12. And I am grateful. I have not, fortunately, suffered any physical problems. God knows I could get a heart attack on this show right now, but right now I'm very healthy.
God forbid.
And, right, exactly. But I am grateful for the ability to feel productive all that much and all that time. And if somebody told me, and they do tell me all the time, not me, but they tell the world all the time, that if you're to be a good human being, you need to really have work-life balance. You know, I feel like I've made my contribution by working 70 hours a week. What would you say to me?
Well, see, here's the thing. Because I started hanging out with a lot of retired people when I was, in my early 30s. And I realized that nobody thinks retired people don't contribute to the world. They have plenty to give back to the world, even if you're not working 78 hours a week. Doesn't mean you can't give back to the world. It means that, you're giving back in ways that maybe aren't valued by our society, but they're very valuable to, maybe the earth, maybe to, just your relationships. It doesn't have to be on a great, great scale. We think that we're so important that we need to do these great, great, huge things for the world, but really, we're just little tiny specks. So,
okay.
The things that we contribute to the world may not be always these epic, epic things that need us to, kill ourselves over. But it doesn't mean that we're not contributing. It doesn't mean that we don't have something to give.
I wasn't implying that it had to be epic. Let's say, for example, that I was a bricklayer. And I made a choice to, now we'll take the discretionary hours, from hour 40 to hour 60. I could choose to say, I want to spend it on the earth. I'm going to use your own terms. I'm going to go can. I'm going to farm. I'm going to be a good friend. I'm going to do all that. Or I could say, I'm a good bricklayer. I'm not the best, but I'm an okay bricklayer. I'm not going to try to create some straw man. I'm an okay bricklayer, and I would rather do some good bricklaying for whoever I'd be doing my bricklaying for, and that would enable them to be happy. I will get some more money, so I'm not worried about my financial future or maybe my family's. Is there anything wrong with that 60-hour-a-week bricklayer? And they're not doing anything epic.
Yeah, if it works for them, I think that's the thing. Is each individual person has to decide for themselves. That's the beauty of living in the United States, right? We get to have these choices, but not everyone has the financial freedom to do that, right? Most people I know are just struggling to make ends meet. We live in the Bay Area. It's not exactly a place where you don't feel like
right.
you have to work all the time,
right,
you know?
Anyway,
so,
thank you very much for the call. I want to
get
a lot of perspective. Thanks very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, my name is Joanne.
Hi, Joanne.
And I just agree with everything that you're saying and the previous caller. But the point that I would like to emphasize is that many people, they become ill for whatever reason, and they have to go on disability or SSI or SSDI. There's a number of programs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're on them, it's wonderful that we have these programs. They make everything so durable. We can do it. But a lot of us, we do want to work. We do want to contribute. We do want to be a part of, of bringing creating a better future for our children and our grandchildren and those to come. But there is a problem with our system. Social Security, by whatever definition, SSI, SSDI, whatever. and that is that when you work, after 6 months, you can keep the first $60 or $65 of your salary per month, and that's so fair. But then after that initial 6 months, they take 50% of the gross. And then out of the gross come all of the deductions. So right. That for a senior or a disabled person or a person who is recovering from a severe illness, but they want to work and they want to contribute, we're kind of stuck because, you know, it costs a little bit of money to go to work. You have to dress a little bit better. You have to have your hair a little bit nicer. You have to transport yourself to work and back. And then if you're lucky enough to have housing, which is wonderful, it's such a blessing in our culture that we are looking out for folks and providing housing. But what happens is that they will take 30%, right. Well, one-third.
I got it. I'm going to interrupt you because we're getting into the weeds. Let me ask you this question. If what would you say to the taxpayer who says, you know, if this person is capable of working, then they shouldn't be on SSDI. We're letting them keep half. And I work hard for my money. I'm not getting housing. I'm not getting anything. Why should I? This person is working, and why should they get this subsidy of housing and money when I'm working and I'm struggling to live in the Bay Area because it's unaffordable to live in the Bay Area and the traffic is a nightmare? Why should I take the little money I have out of my taxes so that somebody else who's working can get housing subsidies?
I agree. It's a good question.
Anyway, I thank you so much for contributing to the Rich Conversation. Thanks very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Let's take one more call on this. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What is your perspective? Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Hi, are you there?
Oh, with us here.
Yeah, good.
Is that the right? I couldn't tell the difference from being on and
yes,
and
you're
listening.
On.
Okay.
You're on. Hi.
Whit Diffie.
Whit Diffie,
and
hi.
I, all my life, in fact, I have pretty much done as little as I could get away with.
Now, I need to let people know, because you just said that, Whit Diffie, who's done as little as he can get away with, is the winning of the Turing Prize, which is the physics equivalent, the computer science equivalent of the Nobel Prize for the greatest contribution in computer science. He is a father of modern-day cryptography. This guy who does a little, at least he can get away with. Whit Diffie, continue.
Well, and the other thing I did, you were talking about, you know, family. I put spending time with Mary ahead of working for, you know, 40 years of my life.
Yeah. So what do you, and yet you were able to accomplish the penultimate prize for world-class work. Is it that you're such a super genius? How did you, while working as little as you could?
I have a greater virtue than being a genius. I have incredibly good luck.
How much is luck? No, now, don't be the typical good Christian modesty thing. How much really was luck as a factor in differentiating you from the zillions of other? And you don't even have a PhD. You were in some measure self-taught. What percentage of your amazing success was attributable to luck? Yeah, I'll stop there.
Well, I think a lot. I mean, maybe good taste has something to do with it also. I set out to work on a problem other people weren't working on outside the government. And the problem I worked on, not only did I do well with it, but it came into its own and became incredibly important.
Yeah, there is a lot of luck. You know, we take for granted. I know a number. Look at how many mediocre people have become president of the United States. There's a lot of luck and timing in that.
Are you criticizing my neighbor?
Your neighbor?
Yeah, he grew up a block and a half from me.
Oh, that's right. You grew up in Jamaica, Queens.
Jamaica Estates, yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Donald
Trump.
Your
neighbor, too. He's
I am criticizing
only a mile or two.
I mean, think about that we have, and I don't want to be one party. A peanut farmer became president. A B-level actor in Ronald Reagan became president. And Donald Trump, a boorish, sleazy entrepreneur, TV reality show guy, became president. There is a lot of luck and timing in this world. I know. Hey, Whit, I love that you called. I appreciate it very much. Anything else you wanted to say before I let you go?
No, yeah, I like wearing a tie, but
I know.
That was two weeks ago.
Talk about your taste. This is a guy, You know, all the rest of the science nerds I know wear T-shirts and shorts and whatever. And this guy wears bespoke suits. You know what? Most people don't even know what bespoke is. It's like, what's the difference between custom-made and bespoke?
Typically, bespoke is do anything you like. Custom-made, they make things to measure. And it's not a clear distinction, but custom-made, typically they say a suit is made to measure. They take a style that's in their book, and then they make one for you.
Well, I should probably have one of those tailors on the show, but maybe not. It's a little too elite for me. I think I'll stay with my T-shirt and shorts. You can wear all the ties you want. I call them instruments of torture. They're little hanging nooses.
I buy my shirt with a collar the right size so that the tie doesn't constrict my neck.
Yeah, all right. Well, maybe next time we get together...
You should have
maybe
a good tailor on. That's an excellent idea.
Excellent. Maybe I should. Or maybe I should just pull you by your high-end tie and yank some sense into you.
Good luck.
Well, it was a pleasure. Hey, I invited you to... I don't know if you heard.
I'll write to you. I have something... You're second in line, somebody.
I'm always second in line, but that's all right. All right, Whit, thanks a million for calling Work with Marty Nemco. I really appreciate it so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, great. You know, I think this is as good a time as any to change gears. You know, I laugh, I have a good time, but I'm also well aware that even in this era of unprecedented, we've had the lowest unemployment rate this month, just came out today, in, I think, 30 years or whatever. That doesn't mean that's so misleading, because the number of unemployed people may be officially low, but the number who have given up on work, or the people who used to make $100,000 a year and are now making $12 an hour at part time, no benefits, are still called employed. I am not making fun of any of that. And indeed, a core mission, if not the core mission of this show, is to help you who may be struggling to find good work, to help you do that, either to pick a niche or land a job or keep from getting fired, I like to be, an equal opportunity work overdoer. I have many clients who are highly successful and still miserable and scared and have trouble sleeping at night. So whether you are unemployed and a bag lady or a bag man, although that has a different connotation, or you are a CEO or a medical researcher, if you're unhappy with your work life or someone you care about, maybe you're not unhappy. Maybe you got a kid who's a teenager who's scared and facing the future. What in the world is he going to do? Be an asteroid miner? Any of those kind of work-related questions, you can call in for what I call a workover. The price is certainly right, zero zippo nada. It's my pro bono work here at KELW. The phone number for a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And I should, for those of you who are joining the show later, the person who just called probably heard my invitation to the KELW listeners. I like to do things on impulse, and this Saturday, on an impulse, I decided to open my home to up to 22. I've got my living room holds 22 people, to KELW listeners who would like to hear me do a 45-minute riff on kind of not obvious career advice. And then after that, we'll take a 5-minute break, and I will play a concert and intersperse, though, a piano concert. I play the piano. And intersperse with some of the stories of my misadventures. And all the while, we'll serve champagne and hors d'oeuvres. So it should be a fun evening. It's Saturday night. You arrive at 6:45. If you're interested in coming, I don't know if there's, the spots could all be gone by now. I don't know. But email me, and I will let you know. M. Nemco, that's M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, E-M as in Mary, K-O, at Comcast.net. We've got callers on the line, so let's go right to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. So I worked all my life. I worked as a waitress, about 4 years ago, I injured my hip, and I can't work obviously in the restaurant anymore. Mm-hmm. And I want to find something suitable for my situation. Mm-hmm. I'm in the San Jose area, so mm-hmm. What type of work do you suggest?
Okay, so I need to learn some things about you, because the right career for one person could be the wrong for another. Tell me a couple of clues about you that can start our conversation toward moving you to a career direction that would make sense for you.
I'm not sure. Could be like a in a computer, some computer type of job, because there's so many tech companies are hiring, but I don't know what kind of entry level, you know, maybe could do a little bit of training, short-term training, and then maybe go in. And I looked into quality assurance, the checker, the tester job, and there's a like a program that's 6 months, and then they prepare you for that kind of job. But I, you know, do you have any suggestions about that?
Yeah, okay, let me try some different things for now. What made you want to become a waitress to begin with? What was it? Was it an interest? Were you particularly good at serving people? Do you love food? Do you, what really made, were you just stuck and that was the only job you could get? What made you become a waitress?
Well, at that time, I was younger, and it was a very busy, very good location, good restaurant at that time, and I made pretty good money, you know, and I just stuck to it, you know.
I see.
I didn't go, you know, to college or anything.
Okay. Were you particularly, usually waitresses who lasted a long time are usually, they're either very efficient and fast, or they're really good with customers, or they just get along with people very well, their bosses, their coworkers. What made you a successful waitress?
Well, I, you know, I had very like a regular customers. I got along with my coworkers and managers. So I think the environment was just good for me, and I liked it.
Do you speak Spanish?
No, I don't.
What language do you speak?
Well, my language is a little bit Russian and Mongolian.
Interesting. Now, I'm always, you know, what often helps a person get a good job is to utilize their unusual background. Now, you're the first human being I think I've ever met who's from has a Mongolian background. Now, is there much of a Mongolian community in the San Jose area?
Oh, no, not many.
Okay. How about, I know there's a lot of Russians, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And do you want to use your Russian language skills for some purpose that we'll try to figure out together?
Oh, I don't think he will. No, not really.
Okay, because there are people who make a living, for example, as translators or as interpreters, real language. You know, for example, there are medical interpreters, which means that if I am a Russian person and I have a medical problem and I don't speak good English, the doctor or the nurse needs to hear, needs somebody to translate. Is that a turn-off for you, or is that a turn-on for you as an option?
No.
Okay. Okay. I want to still learn more about you. What do you do? What have people praised you about? What are you naturally good at? And it could be not just recently, because where you've been stuck as a waitress and now you've been dealing with a bad hip. When you were a girl, when you were in school, when you were a young woman, even today, what have people said, boy, she's good at this, or you feel you have a natural talent for X? What would it be?
Well, I'm a very patient person, so I could do some, like, a teaching. I could be good at it.
Okay. Yeah. Would you rather be teaching Russian in a high school, or would you rather do customer service where you're answering people's questions and requires a lot of patience?
Maybe serving.
Okay. Wait, when you're saying service, are you talking about, I'm sorry, customer service, you mean?
Yeah, I think so.
And well, you mentioned computers. Is that just because we know that San Jose is the land of, you know, technology, or do you have a real interest in learning more about computers?
Well, I looked into that, and the school said, you know, you don't have to have a previous experience.
No, but interest. Let's say I said I don't want you to spend a lot of money. So what if I said I want you to go to a community college in San Jose, where it's basically free, to learn the basics, just enough about computers so that you can be what's called a first-line customer service person for Apple. You know, they have the Apple people who call in, they can't get their phone to work or something like that, so that you can, it's not going to put any stress on your hip. It enables you to enter the world of technology, and maybe even being bilingual, you do speak Russian, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure that if you got some reason, I'm not sure, that's a lie, but I'm confident that if you got some training at a community college in the basics of computers and then got a job, tried to get a job selling yourself as somebody who could do entry-level customer service and are bilingual in English and Russian, they might well hire you because your salary demands won't be high. And because you're not a computer genius, you'll probably be able to explain things more simply for the average person than some super techie. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that could be an option.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I would invite you to do, is to get off the phone, look at the community college nearest you, because commuting is always so hard. Do you know which do you know which community college is nearest where you live?
Well, there's many of them here.
Okay, great. So go on. Do you have a computer at home?
I do.
Great. Look at the computer and look at the two or three community colleges near you that are reasonable distance, and look under their computer science programs or computer education programs, and see if something jumps out at you as being convenient time-wise, and that could at least launch your career. And rather than trust me, because I know a little bit about everything, but I know a lot about nothing, what I recommend you do is if you find a course that sounds appealing, contact that department office and say that you're wondering whether you're considering entering a career in the computer world, perhaps in customer service because you're patient. Would this course be the right first course to take? And maybe they'll shepherd you to something else. How does that feel?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Okay, you take care. I'll give out the phone number again. If you're stuck, this was a very stuck woman. This was an unemployed waitress with a bad hip and who spoke about no transferable skills, and all we had to work with was that she heard that there was computers going on in Silicon Valley and that she's patient. And yet even with those little things, we were able to at least help her take a baby step forward, which is my job for you. If you would like me to try to help you take a baby step forward, whatever your part in the Punt Station in life is, the phone number at this station, KALW, and Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And what I think I want to do is I want to share some careers. You know, listening to her and wanting to help her come up with some ideas, let me share with you some careers that are in that tech space that maybe you wouldn't have thought about, that can, again, make you realize there are jobs other than software engineer or QA person, quality assurance or quality control or customer service. There is a really cool job called medical informatics. The information on preventing disease, curing disease, it's exploding. And it's impossible for even the most diligent healthcare provider to keep up with. Enter the field of medical informatics. Your job is to curate and make accessible the best information for nurses and for doctors, etc. Yeah, some of them are computer programmers, but also people who are, say, a burned-out nurse could indeed be wanting to get away from patient care, could be very helpful and are helpful in developing better systems of medical informatics. Now, I want to stress, computers are not going to soon replace healthcare professionals, but those doctors, nurses, physical therapists, optometrists, everybody else is going to be, and physician assistants, nurse practitioners, they're going to be ever better because alongside of them will be a computer guiding their diagnosis and treatment recommendations. You know, already, you know, I teach at the medical school at UCSF. I teach medical students. My students in class and outside, they're using their laptops to query these databases that have this kind of medical informatics information. There's a website called uptodate.com. And that way they're checking what I'm saying, what my co-teacher who's an MD is saying, and learning best practice, because it's impossible to know it up front, but you can use that really easily to access database called UpToDate and many others to get current knowledge. It's a very, very interesting field. There's probably a little, but before I leave that, there's a less sexy, but it's also important, niche within medical informatics, and that is the medical informaticians that focus on collecting and disseminating patient electronic records. That is crucial, of course. You know, the old days where there was these paper records, and you very often poor patients had to retake tests because the records weren't forwarded. Electronic medical records really is helping that. Other people who are in medical informatics don't just focus on getting information for healthcare providers, but for patients and for consumer education. So medical informatics, to me, is an under-the-radar, outstanding career in that technology space, which is what came to mind in talking to that previous caller. Phone number again, if you want to work over, if you got any kind of work-related problem, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, is this Marty?
It is.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on the air. I hope you don't mind me calling you Marty. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Everybody else does. Only my mother called me Martin. Everybody else, Martin. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, sir.
Sure.
So I have a question. I just started a new career, and I'm pretty fortunate, and I love my job. But one of the things that I encountered when I was looking for a job, and what I see a lot of my friends and colleagues encountering, is that they feel like they don't have any leverage when they're looking for, you know, a new job, or they are in a current job and they want to have a little bit better deal, or their company just comes down and says, these are the kind of changes we're going to make and these are the kind of rules we're going to have. So what kind of leverage do you think, especially people that are just starting careers, have?
Great question.
To negotiate better,
right,
better rates.
First, I want to stipulate to the fact that you're right. And that's the reason we have labor unions, to try to equate some of the power imbalance between employer and employee. And you're also right in saying that the beginning worker has less leverage because he or she doesn't have a great track record, can point to these great accomplishments that save the company or the nonprofit money. But that said, there is some leverage. And what I would do is, first of all, without question, you have the greatest leverage when they've offered you the job and you haven't yet accepted it. Because usually what happens is you've gone through two rounds of interviews, three rounds of interviews. It's used up a lot of the organization's resources, and they've tapped you and they said, you, Mr. or Ms., you are it. Well, you know what? They have a lot, that boss has a lot to lose if that they go, if you turn them down, then they got to go to their boss and say, you know, for an extra $3,000, we lost this guy, and he wanted to telecommute a day and a day a week, and we didn't. That's really not our official policy, so we lost him. He doesn't want that to happen. And so you have your maximum leverage when you're offered the job, but you haven't yet accepted it. The next, right? Then there are three points I want to share with you about leverage points. The next leverage point is when you, right away when you started the job. That's your honeymoon period, and your job description is rarely cast in stone. And negotiation and leverage is not necessarily just about money. And in fact, it usually shouldn't be mainly about money, because if you're making $70,000 and you want to make $80,000, that $10,000 is going to be taxed at your maximum rate, which with federal and state and FICA and Medicare and Obamacare and whatever is 50%. So even if you get 10 grand more, you're losing 5 grand in taxes. So that's usually not enough to change your lifestyle much. But you will normally derive greater benefit from A, getting to have your job description tweaked to accentuate your strengths, which could also benefit the company. If you can get a training budget, say you really want to learn Python you want them to pay for the course, that way they benefit but you benefit. Maybe you do, in this incredibly terrible traffic in the Bay Area, want to telecommute 1 or 2 days a week. Those during your honeymoon period, in those first big meeting, usually everybody has a big meeting, every new employee has a big meeting with the employer before the employer lets them out to do their job. Those are the times to negotiate those kind of changes. And the final time I want to share is right at you keep, starting from day one, you keep track of all your little accomplishments, little and big. Maybe it was a comment you made at a meeting that added a lot of value. Maybe it was that you got your work done faster. Maybe you came up with an idea for streamlining something. Maybe you mentored a young person. Maybe you brought some cool idea in from a training you did. you make a list of all of your accomplishments. And so then at the first salary review, say at the 90-day mark or six-month mark, you, in advance of the meeting to discuss your salary review, you send that in writing to the boss and say, hey, as you're contemplating what my salary should be in this review, I thought this list of my accomplishments might be helpful. So those are the three leverage points before when you offer the job but haven't accepted it, right away in the honeymoon period in the first days, and right before your salary review. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
All right.
Okay. Give out the phone number again if you want to work over. I've been doing this. I'm in my 29th year doing this here, so I've heard it all. And I frankly, if I'm really honest, the tougher the question, the better. You know, I've heard the routine questions for a million years. So you've got a really hard problem that's related to your work life, call. You know, worst, it won't cost you anything. You know, worst thing that happens, I don't help you. But I usually can. And it's more interesting for the listeners and for me. The phone number here for any kind of work-related problem, what I call it, work over here, work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm actually a nurse, and I do love my job, but I've been thinking lately, what else can I do? And I turn on the radio, and you start telling us about informatics, and I'm like, wow, this is great. You know, we're at work, we use electronic records, and
right.
There's certain days where we're sitting around the nurse's station, and we're thinking, why won't they get a nurse to help, you know, make these programs, mm-hmm. because there's certain things that we wish we could change.
Yep.
So I want to know, where can I apply for that job?
Okay. I don't have, you know, a specific name of a company, but I can tell you what I would do. If I wanted to be a nurse informatician, mm-hmm. I really think it sounds simplistic, but we take for granted Google search because it's free and it's available. But if you Google searched nurse informatician careers, you put in quotes, you put open quote, double, you know, quotation marks, nurse mm-hmm. informatician or nurse informatics, close quotation mark, and then the word career or the word jobs, you will learn a ton. You will learn who the major players are. You will learn about the training, players, that is, in who hires. I'm sure there are companies that specialize in this. And I know that because nursing is, as you well know, the frontline healthcare provider in so many situations, it is critical that they have informatics at their fingertips. And so I would bet my life that there are companies that do use nurses. And it may be, though, before you go and you contact those companies, you'll find out that maybe there's a course. You know, we live in a world where some of the very best courses are online. They're very current, and they're often free or near free. So after you find out more about this field, if you don't hear already about a great certificate program in nurse informatics or whatever, go to there's a shakeout. So there's really only a couple of major websites that list lots and lots of online courses. One is called Coursera.org, Coursera. Another is edX, edX.org. And then there is Udemy, udemy.com, and also Udacity, but that tends to be more, and maybe, no, and I guess maybe for informatics it might be, udacity.com. You go and you visit those, and you at least take one course to get you familiar with the language, with the concepts, the key issues, and then you do a thorough job of, and, you know, maybe even, you know, instead of just a broad search, it could be that the organization you work for, if you're working for, you know, CPMC or you're working for Kaiser or whatever, they may have nurse informaticians in-house, and it may be easier to make your transition from within your system. So that's my one-minute lecture on what you might do to make the transition to this absolutely important field. What do you think?
Thank you so much. This was awesome.
Russell, I really appreciate your call. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Before I go back to the phones, I think what I want to do is I want to share another career, because this person liked the medical informatics one. And I want to shift to something completely different. You know, whether a Republican administration is in power or a Democratic administration, we've clearly seen that the governmental budget grows. The deficit grows. For whatever reason, we are in what's called a Keynesian world, in which it is determined that we need to, until the economy is really flying, we need to keep pumping more money into the economy, and that occurs very often with bigger government. one of the most rewarding job titles, especially in federal government, but they exist at the state and local as well, is called an analyst. There is a couple of kinds. One is called a program analyst, who analyzes the different programs that could be used to serve a need, like Native American AIDS or whatever it is the government's focusing on. Another is a budget analyst, who analyzes, obviously, budgets. And so looking for federal or state jobs, and federal jobs, of course, the federal jobs website is usajobs.gov. The California site is jobs.ca.gov for California. And if you simply Google city of wherever you're living, city of San Francisco, city and county of San Francisco, employment, you'll find job. The analyst job title is very interesting because very often you are moving from project to project. So one week you could be analyzing what kind of ergonomically healthy desks should be bought. And the next time you could be analyzing why African Americans are underrepresented in physics in the national research labs. It's very interesting field, and also this was the shocker. A few months ago, I read a study that came out of the Congressional Budget Office, and they found that for the equivalent work, federal pay is now higher than in the private sector. Maybe that's because the government is they're less worried about the bottom line. They can always print more money or whatever. So analyst jobs, great job title, interesting, and program or budget, I think, are the main two categories. They may also develop, by the way, program analysts may also write grant proposals, or requests for proposals. So let's say the problem is, men die 5 years younger than women, and there's almost all the money is spent on women's health in the government. Maybe they decide, it's finally time to pay a little attention to men's health, so we're going to put out a request for proposal for something to improve men's health. The program analyst might write that grant proposal, that request for proposal, and then disseminate it through what's called the Federal Register, which is a widely read source that nonprofits tend to read. And so the analyst job is one that I really want to tout. Anyway, the phone number, if you want to work over here at KALW Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now back to the phones. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Oh, hi there, Marty.
Hi.
Hi. So I work in the software industry for the past like 10 years, and then I'm a little bit conflicted. I'm thinking about like a next career move. I can either stay in software and look for another either startup or big company to work for, but I feel like it's just not very satisfying, like doing the feel like it's just solving first world problem a lot of the things. So I'm thinking about doing a more dramatic change of like moving into like either being a surgical tech and working with surgeons or work as even like paramedics. I mean, I never tried such thing. I'm just have like an interest in those, but it's really like different. And then I'm also going to give up all the good salary and also flexibility working in technology. I think one of the struggles is that I just don't feel that purposeful working in software. And so another option is like working in biotech, but without a biology background, it's really get hard to get into biotech. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on my situation.
Very articulately said. Now, I noted with interest what you said in passing, but seems to be very central. You said that you're working on first world problems. That normally is code for I want to work for the poor people either in America or in worldwide or something like that. Is that what you mean by you feel it's limiting to it's you don't want to work on first world problems? Is that what you meant by that?
A little bit. For example, I'm working on like a lot of like mobile apps and things that solving it make like definitely develop like people like us a job a little bit easier, a little bit more convenient, but I feel like I'm not really making a difference in anybody's life. And then that's why I'm considering something in medicine. I mean, it's too late to go to medical school when you're in the early 30s, so I'm thinking like something that can utilize my skills in technology and software experience. But also do something that really make difference in people's lives, if that makes any sense.
Of course it does. So let's see how we can leverage. If you made a really good salary in tech, you were probably quite good. You were a software engineer, you were a coding person?
I'm product manager, so I can code a little bit and I can design a little bit, but I'm not like hardcore in either.
Okay. So, you know, there are some, obviously, you know, I've been moved by a couple of things. They say that in Africa, for example, there's a very big infrastructure of cell phones. That's how people connect because there's very little wired anything. So if you're creating an app that might, for example, help people find food in, you know, developing nations, or water or gasoline, or get information about how to farm well, or how to deal with an abusive boyfriend or whatever, and that's one area that has moved me in terms of technology apps. And the other is in many people with mental health problems can't afford a therapist, $175 an hour to go in and sit and talk with them. But there are these new apps that are $4.99 that right. on their phone are really good at helping people in the moment deal with their issues. One's called Pacifica that I've heard of. It's gotten thousands of really great reviews on iTunes, you know, as an app that can be downloaded. So I'm wondering if you're just what I call in the right church but the wrong pew. Maybe you could leverage your product management skills in the service of a product that is more user-centric, that isn't just some convenience thing to help them more easily access their favorite tunes, you know, on Pandora. But
yeah.
What do you think about that you're in the right church, the church of technology, but you're in the wrong pew? You need to be in the pew with the cheap seats, with the helping poor people. What do you think? Or just more helpful apps to just plain folk?
Yeah, that's definitely a like viable option that I should explore. Yeah, I never thought of that way. Yeah, I'm thinking more like extreme changes, but those kind of extreme changes always a big investment, and then you don't know if it's going to like it or not, and it's no easier way to test it.
Right.
And then you can paramedic has to go into school.
And then also you can make it a two-step. Let's say you move from that and you're working on an app for diabetics. Right? Now, you're still using your technology, but let's say after a while you're still sick of the damn project manager coding or whatever, but now you're in the world of diabetics because in the course of your research, maybe you're talking with doctors or nurses or patients or whatever, and you can make connections. Then from there, it may make it easier to make a transition directly into healthcare, even not so much as a healthcare provider where you have to go a bunch of school, but as an administrator, because as a product manager, many of the skills are transferable. Then you could make the argument that your ability to handle a budget, manage people, timelines, use Agile and Scrum and software, all that stuff could be applied in that health space. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Thank you so much for the advice.
You're most welcome. I'm pleased you call Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. I'm going to give out the phone number one last time. If you or someone you care about has got a work problem of any sort, public sector, private sector, whether you're 16 or 76, a simple problem, or frankly, the harder the better. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko for a workover. Price is free. It's my pro bono work here at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Since we seem to be, the calls seem to be in the, you know, tech-oriented, I'll share another I love under-the-radar careers that, you know, people haven't thought about. Everybody knows about product manager, project manager, software coder, software architect, you know, executive, blah, 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 blah. But how many people know about computer chip layout designer? Nobody. At least almost nobody. They're often called integrated circuit IC designers, and the job essentially requires you to fit New York City onto a piece of confetti. But it sounds harder than it is. But like a chip, like a potato chip, it can be addictive. You can find yourself working long hours, not because it's required, because like I said, I know a lot of these kind of techie guys, and they are mainly guys, who you know, love to stay up all night. I'm getting it. It's almost done. What your job is as a computer chip layout designer is you feed an engineer's specifications for like a 20,000 device chip. A device could be like what's called an AND gate or whatever, into a computer program that lays it out for you. But the computer layout usually has imperfections that you have to then help fix with the help of some other software. And your job is basically to cram those little chips in as tight as you can, not those chips, but those little devices, those AND gates and OR gates and capacitors and transistors and whatever, in as tight as possible and still get the chip to work. It's an under-the-radar interesting career called Computer Chip Layout Designer. Let's go to the phones. We only have a little time. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
A friend is a veterinary technician, and at her last job, the surgeon that was operating on an animal took a stapler that they use in that procedure, and it had biological material on it, and he stapled her with it out of the blue.
Wow, Jesus.
Hurting her.
Jesus.
And she hasn't been able to ask the right questions to find the right attorney to sue him. She's at a loss. She doesn't know what to do.
Well, there's always, you know, there's this wonderful show here at KLW called Your Legal Rights. It gives free legal advice. I have to give a shout-out to Chuck Finney, who is the longtime host, who's in the hospital. He's apparently seriously ill. But the show, you know, he wanted specifically the show to keep going, and he's had substitute hosts on. So you could call. It's on every Wednesday night from 7:00 to 7:30 for an hour. 7 to 8, thank you. 7 to 8, you can ask the question, or that's a kind of a problem that is so, you know, there is legal aid. Very often, you know, Google legal aid in your geographic area. Very often they have a lawyer's day at the library where you can go get free advice. But then there is I can't think of a specific attorney who would specialize in something like that. But Jesus, if there ever sounded, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, there was some cause, but not cause to do something as severe as that. He might have yelled at her or whatever for something, but stapling her, what can I say? That's my best advice.
Thank you.
I wish I could end on a more upbeat note, and so I will. So I've got a little bit of time. So one more career that's a kind of, we're staying in this tech space for now, and there is something, again, under the radar, which I like, called remote sensing technician. We always hear about the Internet of Things, which means basically remote sensors, whether it be a remote refrigeration, if you are a business that's shipping refrigerated fruits and vegetables, it remotely enables you to assess the temperature, or there are bioterrorism sensors. And so there are technicians who specialize in that, you know, even remotely sensing whether a region's crop yield will be low for you. How should zoning laws be changed? There's a lot of remote sensing of climate and whatever that help address those questions by obtaining and polishing and with scientists helping to analyze satellite data, aerial data, thermal data, radio wave data, working in homeland security, as I said, agriculture, natural resources, urban planning, etc., remote sensing technician. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank all of you. I certainly want to thank Debbie Kennedy, my board operator, and all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7 p.m. You can call in for a workover. Plus, I will talk with Kimberly Barr. She's from Kaiser Permanente. She is a genetic counselor. It is amazing what, you know, we're learning ever more about what those 18,000 genes do. And so a genetic counselor can help, so for example, a woman decide if she has the gene for breast cancer, whether she should have a prophylactic mastectomy, or a severely mentally retarded guy, whether he should father a child. Anyway, it should be fascinating. Until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For the archives of Dr. Marty Nemko's articles, information on his 9 books, including the new 3rd edition of The Best of Marty Nemko, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemko.com. That's martynemko.com. And you can join Marty again next Thursday evening at 7 for Work with Marty Nemko, right here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.